Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 171. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott, bringing us the news.
Indeed we are.
Graham thickens on sports.
Me and, on sports?
And Phil Wilson with weather and celebrity gossip.
That's me.
That fits.
As long as I get to say Hook Echo somewhere in the weathercast. I love saying Hook Echo.
Hook Echo and then Kim Kardashian. In the same sentence.
Kim Kardashian.
I saw a great reference to Kim Kardashian in that Cringely post. Did you see that on InfoWorld?
No, put it in the show notes because I haven't read it yet.
Facebook stock dropping as fast as a Kardashian's underpants.
Oh boy. Nice reference. Oh my God. Well, speaking of that, we should get into the Facebook stock. But Graham, you went to Project Skyway to that event.
Yeah, I did.
And wrote a nice post about it, too.
Well, it was, you know, I was just a quickie to just kind of describe the four companies that completed the program. And I was surprised as many people turned out as they did. They filled a theater, a rather obscure theater downtown, which I had trouble finding. There were a couple hundred people there. And four companies did their onstage demos that were quite well done, I thought. They were well coached, and there were some opening remarks ahead of that by the Project Skyway folks, Jem and Casey. I didn't get there quite in time for that, but I got there while Justin Kaufenberg was kind of telling the story of TST Media as an example of one of the more successful internet companies here in our state, now with 100 employees. But the four startups were interesting. I'd heard of a couple of them. HypeSpark is helping you get deals for links you're already sharing anyway. And they're working with nightclubs and restaurants, and Toby Keith's introduce them, the general manager of Toby Keith's in West End. You guys ever been there?
Yeah, I've been by it. Same here.
I haven't been there.
Like the guy from HypeSpark seemed a little angry.
How so?
Well, just the way his presentation was. It's like, you know, he dropped the bullshit, you know, word first thing into his presentation. Oh, and it was like, it was like, you know, dude, why are you so angry? I don't know, you know, I look at that, that's, you know, it's basically paying for links is what you're doing with this particular project, which has been done before in different mediums as well. So, you know, it says that they're paying you for links you're posting anyway. Well, not necessarily posting it anyway. So,
yeah, true. Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, it's an interesting thing. I hope it works out for him. But boy, I just noticed, it's like, why are you so angry?
Yeah, that was a little weird. But it got its start in Madison, where I guess he and maybe one of his co-founders, I can't remember, maybe the whole team went to school at UW-Madison. So they kind of started this here, but the founder is from here, and relocated the company here, I guess. And so that was the first one. And then Yumzing is a site to share your food adventures, although it's not launched yet. When you go to yumzing.com, they didn't quite get it ready for public view or sign up. Maybe you can sign up, but it's not really ready yet. And then Political Harmony is a match.com for politicians. So I guess they're marketing it to politicians, and it's to primarily to help college students figure out who's the most, you know, compatible political candidates to their views. Seems like a concept that maybe has been done before, but I noted their politicalharmony.co because somebody else has the .com, which is never a good thing.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of an interesting piece. But you know, it's one of those that sort of caters to, you know, Americans' political laziness as far as picking their politicians. And so I think that there's definitely a market out there for it. And I think, didn't Steve, didn't we do Wasn't there an app something put together by the folks over at NPR a while back that did this same sort of thing? You kind of entered what your beliefs were, and then it sort of matched you up with the politician in the state or something like that. Do you remember that?
Well, that was a feature, I think, on that.
Yeah, it was a feature on their
Minnesota Daily, or not? Yeah. It wasn't Minnesota Daily, but it was that sort of River of News feature that they had.
Yeah, I thought it's kind of an interesting piece. This is an interesting concept. I like the political harmony thing.
Yeah, but therein lies the problem with a lot of startups these days is their features. They're not companies. Well, yep,
exactly.
How these things are going to turn into companies is another question altogether. And they didn't have that much time on stage to talk about how they plan to make money. And then the final one was Quad ROI, which is an information service for, I guess, utilities is kind of what I gathered. But again, the site isn't really available yet. So there's just some basic information up on their homepage right now. But the thing I found most interesting about that is he said it was a structured database. And I thought, well, there's a switch. A startup not using an unstructured NoSQL database. You know, it's like... it's kind of a big data play, I guess, where they're gathering all this information about clean energy for utilities. But I'm unclear as to whether the utilities will use this information to like market to consumers then or what. You know, it's like those kind of questions the attendees had to get into in detail with the startups later. I didn't see a single VC in the audience that I recognized, and I must say I'm not sure I even saw any angels that I know in the audience. You know, a lot of service providers, a lot of other startup folks, and various and sundry people that are active in the startup community. But I hope for the sake of these startups that there were a few money guys hanging around. I just didn't see them.
But isn't that the whole point though, that Project Skyway, I mean, it's their show, it's their event and they're the funder and all of that. So,
well, the way I understand it is Project Skyway has one backer, Jim.
Yeah.
And Jim Erdem. And but no, the idea of a demo day is to expose. I mean, if we're going to follow on from what YC does and Techstars, the idea is to get a whole bunch of investors to come out and hear these folks because they need more money. You know, they aren't going to
ready for the next level. Yeah,
they burn through the 18 grand or 12 grand or whatever they get from Project Skyway. That just kind of keeps them alive for 3 months. The whole idea of these demo days is to expose it to a larger community and particularly investors. But, you know, I mean, the word will get out. These folks are, you know, getting, these startups are getting some publicity now. And,
well, so Graham, isn't it really, you've got to wonder if those people that do have money, those VCs and those angels, how many of these events will they actually go to? Or do they kind of expect to hear from people coming to them? I wonder how often a VC will actually go out looking for an investment.
Well, you bring up a good point. A lot of them like to maintain a low profile. Especially here in Minnesota. I mean, you know, in Silicon
Where
Valley.
We specialize in the low profile.
Well, yeah. And angels are not as easy to discover here, no question about it. But in Silicon Valley, New York, Austin, Seattle, are you kidding? They pour out to these events.
Do they?
These kind of events. Oh, hell yes. I mean, they can't. Y Combinator can't fit the people in the room. They have to get a bigger room. I mean, it's like getting to go to their demo day is a hot ticket. And anybody who's anybody in the angel community in Silicon Valley is at that event. Project Skyway is really just getting going. This is just the second year.
Yeah.
What did they have? Five companies that graduated from it last year and now four this year. And, it's really not the same model, obviously, as a YC or a Techstars, because there aren't a lot of investors that are part of the program. As you know, the typical Techstars program has 12 to 15 investors slash mentors involved, and they make a four-year commitment of at least $50,000 a year. Each of those dozen or 15 or 20 in some cases. So, I mean, there's a lot of money involved in these Techstars groups around the country. There's four formal ones, main ones, and they invest, you know, out of their own pockets beyond what they give as the stipend to each firm that's accepted into the program. That get, you know, they get about $18,000 for a three-person team. But the investor mentors in Techstars, you know, obviously invest additionally beyond that, and they help connect these startups with other sources of money. And it's not uncommon for many of these Techstars and Y Combinator, obviously, too, to get a large funding, you know, right out of the chute as soon as they graduate from the program. You know, many of them are getting hundreds of thousands of dollars, and some of them are closing Series A rounds, you know, almost right away, you know, of $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. But those are the big boys, and, you know, and not every city in the country can have a tech accelerator like those, although they try to help. Any city that comes to them to set up their own. And there are many affiliated Techstars accelerators now that are sort of part of the sub-network of programs around the country. So it's accelerators are everywhere these days, and you know, not all of them will ever become a Y Combinator or a Techstars, and many of them won't survive. But you know, many of them are specialized. You know, they're healthcare accelerators. There's an edutech accelerator in the Valley called Imagine K-12, which our friends from KidBlog actually were accepted into, but couldn't participate last year. But so there are a lot of vertical interest kinds of accelerators cropping up, and you know, it's all good. So anyway, that was Project Skyway, and they had a party that night, which really wasn't a party. It turned out it was a bunch of guys meeting at a bar to buy beers for themselves. Yeah. So I thought that was sort of strange. It's like, wait a minute, isn't a party like sort of a sponsored event, like with some munchies or something? No, it was just a bunch of guys meeting at a bar. So I met down there and had a beer and chatted with some folks, and you know, but it wasn't a huge event. It was down at Vic's on Main Street. So that was, but it was a successful day, I think. I think they were happy with how things went.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad you were able to go down there and also to cover it.
Yeah. Well, I had to. I didn't get there last year. I think I was out of town. So
yeah,
this year I felt a need to be there.
Well, another big story this week, and I don't know how many of you guys had people ask you, should I buy the Facebook stock?
My advice to everyone was no. Not yet.
So,
not yet.
Oh, Tim, you didn't buy any?
No, I'm waiting to get until it gets down to 15.
I'm waiting for, yeah, Tim said 15, so I'm gonna roll with Tim. We Lakeville guys stick together with our bucks. So
you guys go in for 15, I'll wait for 14.
14. Okay. All right. 14.
Boy, I tell you what, though. I mean, talk about ugly.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's lost $35 billion in value.
Yep.
Since the IPO.
If you look at that, you know, and again, we'll reference Mary Meeker's slides in a bit. She has a very interesting slide on that very topic of you know, IPO or tech cycle of change and growth. And this really applies to, you know, easily to Facebook and so many other IPOs. as far as, you know, the level of hype and, you know, how far that reaches. And then all of a sudden there's this big point of disappointment, and then it kind of settles back down to realism, and then it grows from there. So
yeah.
I think that was a very interesting slide, and I think very applicable to this Facebook situation right now. But we can talk more about that later. But 15 is the number, right, Jim? We're going to stick with 15.
Yeah. I think their valuation supports that the current revenues and everything about 17, 18, something like that. So if we can get it for 15, that I think that would be a good buy.
Yeah.
It did roar back 5% yesterday, you know, closing at 29.60. So, you know, it doesn't go down every single day. It's just gone down most days.
Yeah.
But
it's a little, over eight $8 a share off of its IPO.
Oh, it's more than that. It's at 29. Oh, yeah. It would be a little over eight. Yeah. 38 was the was the pumped up price that should never have happened, you know. But, you know, it kind of shows to me that there isn't a bubble, that there's not a danger of a bubble, you know, at least from a Wall Street standpoint, you know. You know, the street or the market didn't buy into it in a big way. And maybe that's a good thing. You know, things were overhyped. It was overpriced. You know, shame on Morgan Stanley. But
guys are protected, though. I mean, they all got greedy and they all made a lot of money. So I think that there are some early investors that are not going to be real happy because they're not going to make a whole lot of money. But, you know, the underwriters and the people inside Facebook, all those people, you know, what's a billion here, a billion there?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, life will go on and you know, it's good that a bubble, you know, isn't happening in the market. LinkedIn is the one that just continues to do well, though, in that space. And so you got to hand it to those guys. I have a lot of respect for how they've done things, and I think there's a lot of happy shareholders on that one, but I don't know of any others in the social space where you can necessarily say that.
Well, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday who's involved in LinkedIn at a higher level than I am, and you know, has bought into the more advanced features of that. And I had no idea you could spend so much on LinkedIn if you really wanted to, because at whatever level you could start mining data inside that community like nobody's business. I had no idea. I'm always all about the free stuff, so I'm using, and like so many other people at the free level, but boy, those people that want to invest can really find out a lot of information within LinkedIn. And you know, maybe that's the future for a Facebook situation, you know, as you look at that model for social media, and it might be worth some investigation.
Well, you know, I connected up with a guy that used to be a buddy of mine in high school, and he lived just a few doors down from me for many, many years. And I'm on LinkedIn and I'm poking around, and I thought, geez, I haven't even thought about this guy for years. And I looked him up, Greg Kucher, Dr. Greg Kucher. Turns out he's CEO of Mayo Clinic's Health Systems. The hospitals. And so I connected with him on LinkedIn.
Send him a mail. We were great buddies. You remember?
Right. We haven't talked in 40 years, but you know.
Yeah.
I found out you're a bigwig, so I'd love to reconnect with you.
Oh, stop. Yeah. But it was funny. Yeah. But it was funny sucking because, you know, first of all, I recognized him immediately, but I sent him a note about when another buddy and I went up to see him up at St. John's. He was running the radio station up there, and my buddy and I were three sheets to the wind, to put it kindly. And we were trying to get him to play Inagata the Vita,
the long
so
version,
that we could go out and hang out. Just and he was so pissed off at us. Anyway. So here he went on. I went on to be a load, and he went on to be a doctor. So.
Well, then, you know, that's a question that I always ask people. You know, if you're on Facebook and you're connected to, you know, somebody gets it to, you know, reaches out to you from your high school years or something like that, and how likely are you to connect with somebody, say, that has become, you know, a bigwig at Mayo, or a guy that's living in a van down by the river? I mean, will you connect with those guys, or, you know, or will you not? Is it no matter how close you were in high school?
That's more of a problem on Facebook than it is on LinkedIn, don't you think? I mean, with old high school friends. I went to so many high schools, I really don't have anybody hit me on Facebook that you know, that were high school friends.
Why is that, Grant? Why did you keep changing?
I didn't have that many close friends because I went to three different high schools.
Why is that?
Because the family moved often. Oh, okay. And I'm talking high school in near Chicago, in Austin, Minnesota, and then I graduated in Southern California at Covina High School. So I was only at Covina High School for a semester. So, you know, it's like I didn't really have any friends from that high school that would ever look me up, you know. So I don't have that problem on Facebook, which I'm very glad about. And I only really use it as a professional kind of a network anyway. On LinkedIn, I also don't have people. The worst problem I have on LinkedIn is people overseas trying to connect. And I thought, why would I connect with this person? I don't know them, or I'll never meet them. And so I've always tried to practice on LinkedIn. I'd rather only connect with people I have met
physically, physically.
Or hope to meet soon, might meet at an event. But I break that all the time. I mean, with legitimate people that are obviously well connected, but the recruiters, you know, oh God, you know, I really don't connect with them. And they're a lot of the ones that are trying to build up these huge followings on LinkedIn. They have to, it's their business. But anyway, no, I feel lucky that I don't have that problem on Facebook or LinkedIn with all these old people from my past trying to connect with me. Do you guys have that a lot?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I would say that the answer is yes on LinkedIn and no on Facebook, because I'm very discriminating about Facebook. But I think, Tim, I think you put this link in the show notes about his social media slowing down. And yeah. I last night I did a Foursquare check-in, and I realized I haven't done a Foursquare check-in for months.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting about that is when you do that, Steve, is when you and I'm with you, you realize and you get the little congratulations from Foursquare because you've passed somebody, and you look at all those people that you've passed with your one check-in and think, well, if I'm passing this guy with one check-in, they're not using it much either.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I've been doing a lot of them. I've been checking in and showing my meals, and I had the greatest French toast yesterday at the Wiseacre Eatery with Robert Stevens. And I tweeted it, and some guy, I did a Foursquare check-in with a photo, which also goes to my Twitter. And some guy responded, "Looks like a heart attack waiting to happen." And I thought,
it is
French toast? No, I don't think so. But anyway, it was a nice big pile of good-looking food, and so.
But Steve, your point was.
My point was is that I look at these apps that are on my iPhone and my iPad and so on, and I'm realizing that as much as I goof on a lot of this stuff, my use of it is slowing dramatically. And it's not because I'm not interested in doing it. You know, I'm posting things on Facebook. I don't do much on LinkedIn. I do a little bit on Google+, but for the most part, it's, you know, if I think about it, I'll just do a quick snapshot or something and just send it off. But I want a tool like Posterous, which got a little convoluted as they're trying to survive. But you send it once, and then it'll go to multiple places.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But the problem is you're talking, there's a difference. Sorry, my dog just took on off or something, but you speak differently in different communities. I mean, posting to many sites all at once doesn't accomplish your goal, because you should be using those sites differently for each sort of you know, Facebook is social, LinkedIn is business, Twitter is Twitter because it has its own language. So, you know, sending out those blanket posts, I don't think works very well. So, you know, are people using as many different social networks as they used to? No. They're probably narrowing in on stuff that they like. A lot of this social stuff that comes and goes, a la say a Google Plus, you know, I think it's only natural that it's going to slow down. And when you see huge growth of something, there's this whole new niche of communication. Of course, it's going to grow rapidly. It's going to explode. It's going to, you know, go viral. But ultimately, yeah, it has to slow down because there's that adoption that's taken place.
Well, I think the story that I put in the notes is taking a kind of a narrow stock market sort of view that, you know, after the Facebook IPO and, you know, kind of after social has sort of gone more mainstream, that from an investor standpoint, it's less attractive than it was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, it's, and the field is much more crowded. So the opportunity for success is a bit smaller. So yeah, from an investment standpoint, it has to slow down.
But I had to think, you know, well, does that mean that either all these social channels are sort of mainstream and now part of the marketing mix and part of what we do in PR now? So it's less exciting and less new, or is it truly sort of this, you know, ebbing away and we're going to see something else, you know, kind of come in to take its place? I don't think so, but I don't know either. If the investors' money goes away from the space, what happens? Because I think investors should
invest in the post office. What do you think?
Nobody has really figured out a way to make lots of money except for Google at this point. Facebook does have a lot of potential, but I think that. You know, their market cap is kind of, all their potential is sort of built into that. So even if they come up with some great mobile phone thing and mobile commerce thing, their stock isn't going to increase a whole awful lot.
Well, do you buy into that rumor that they're going to do a smartphone, Facebook?
I think they have to. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's mobile is where it's at. And that's going to be their only way to compete with Google.
Well, you know what, though? As I remember, maybe it was in the Steve Jobs, Walter Isaacson book about the CEO of ESPN walking up to Steve Jobs at some event and wanting to introduce himself and shake his hand and so on. And he walks up and introduces himself and Jobs looks at him and just goes, why'd you do such a shitty phone? And he just walked away. and
ESPN?
ESPN, the CEO of ESPN. Now remember, ESPN had done a branded Motorola smartphone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he looked at him like he had three heads and he just walked away from him. And of course the thing was a dismal failure. and I think about that with respect to a Facebook phone is the fact that to try to compete with the juggernaut that is Apple and Android, and now you have Windows Phone, and to try to compete in that space, I think they'd be much better served doing what they're doing, which is beefing up their app and making their app better.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I think they have a blind spot with mobile apps, and hopefully the Instagram acquisition will change some of that.
Yeah, I think what they want to do is they want to be able to have people think when I take a photo or when I do something that's really simple, I just want to do it and post it. And if Facebook is the easiest way to do that with the Instagram app, then that's what people will do.
Right, but you know, the rumor has it that that Apple's going to do the same sort of integration with Facebook that they did with Twitter at some point this year,
right into
the OS.
Right.
So wouldn't that sort of hurt them from a monetization standpoint? It's now a standard feature of the operating system, and you don't have to go into their apps.
Well, I think ultimately the demand from people will be that you want to be able to pick and choose where you have stuff go. And Facebook wants everyone to adopt their walled garden approach. So everything's all about Facebook. Now, Google's doing the same thing with Google Plus, in that you can't post to Google Plus through a lot of different apps because they haven't opened that up yet. And so it's you have to physically go there and do it, either with their mobile app or with a web browser. And so you're sort of locked into that. Well, same thing with Facebook. So they're both trying to, you know, keep us and keep everybody within their walled garden. And Apple is taking a different approach, and I would assume Android from that standpoint, in that, you know, people want choice. Well, I want to post something to Twitter, I want to post something to Facebook, or I want to post something to LinkedIn or whatever. And now by building it into the OS, it's even easier. And I think that ultimately is what people are going to push for.
Well, we can already do that, like in Instagram. I mean, every time I do an Instagram, I decide where I want it to go. It's very simple. Right. Boom, 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 done, you know? Mm-hmm. So we need more of that, obviously. And instead of having everything go everywhere.
Well, and the other part of it is that I've been even more interested in security lately. I've started installing something called WordFence on multiple blogs that I manage. And it's a real-time live site activity. So you can look at crawlers and you can look at 404s and pages not found and people trying to log in and log out. And I have been absolutely stunned by the Ukraine, China, Russian Federation attempts to log in, attempts to do comments and so on and so forth. I've been blocking them like crazy. Well, that feeds into this whole, which is a completely separate discussion that we'll have at another time, but it's all about the stakes going up with cybersecurity. And it really is. And so when I look at an app and the app says, hey, connect your Twitter account, your Facebook account, your LinkedIn account, your Google account, you know, do it all. Nah, I'm not doing that. I might do Twitter because I don't care that much if that were to ultimately get hacked. But I'm not going to give people access to Google, my Google credentials and all that other stuff. And by building it into the OS, you then make that whole thing more secure.
Good point, particularly with OS X or iOS.
iOS, yeah.
Well, I think it's about trust, and I think that Apple and Google, to a certain degree, have developed that level of trust with the user, and I don't think Facebook has. And I think they've got a long way to go before you're going to really trust them, especially in the commerce area. So the upside for Facebook is, you know, a mobile commerce. And, you know, if I have to do everything within the Facebook walled garden, I'm not sure if I'm going to do that. Just because they haven't earned my trust.
Yeah, right. For sure. Do you guys click like a lot of times when you see stuff, you know, popping up on Facebook? And do you understand how they do those sponsored ads where your like can then be featured in an ad?
Yep.
Unless you adjust your privacy settings.
Yep.
You do that.
Fills the sponsored ads. Sure.
Right. Well, I mean, it's the process. Yeah. Of course, there's that ability to. But I have fairly tight privacy restrictions, so I'm not too worried about it. But a lot of people don't take that time. But I mean, that's that being part of the community means being active in the community, and that goes for the community you live in or the social media community that you're a part of. If you want to take up space, and believe me, I've got a lot of accounts in social media communities where I'm just taking up space and nothing being involved. But Facebook, I tend to find myself more and more involved.
You know, I was going to say that phone, that purported phone of theirs, is that more of a play for other, you know, elsewhere than the United States with their huge global, non-U.S. audience? That's what I tend to think, is that they see if they really are going to do something like that, they see the potential maybe more in the developing countries for a phone like that.
You know, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because there's big numbers. And if it's going to be a cheap phone, you know, then it'll get used and you know, purchased a lot more in outside the U.S., I would say. Because what is it, 900 million total Facebook users, but it's still only, you know, you can only get so many in the United States. I don't think it's 175 million yet, is it? You'd think it would be more than that, but I don't think it is. It's not over 200. So the large part of their market is still non-US and will continue to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the other big news, and I wish there were video, complete videos of this or synopsis videos, but the All Things D10 conference was going on, and the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, was there, and people were picking apart and parsing every word
that was coming out.
Yeah, all those videos should be on iTunes by now, though. So you should be able to go and watch them. And a lot of them are on the Wall Street Journal site or the All Things D site.
Right. Yeah, they hype the bejeepers out of that. I just can't imagine they're getting
videos,
the traffic
though.
That they used to get, though. You know, when Jobs was around. I mean, is it?
I mean, everybody wants to know how will Tim carry on the Jobs legacy. Of course, there's still
that guy's a great poker player, though. He doesn't give much out. You know, he very carefully chooses his words, and you know, and everybody tries to read something into it. And it's, I don't know. Did he really say that much, Steve? That you learned?
No, not really.
I mean, he sort of confirmed, though, some of the things that I would hope that he would have, which is he's going to stick at what he's good at, which is the more operational side of things. Mm. And he's going to let, you know, the design, you know, Johnny Ive run design and Phil Schiller run marketing with a freer hand than when Jobs was CEO. So you're going to see some different stuff in marketing and design will still be, you know, key, but it won't have the Jobs touch to it. So we'll have to see what Sir Jonathan Ive comes up with.
Yeah, you gotta be wondering, is he feeling his oats that now that he doesn't have Steve breathing down his collar every day?
Well, I think they had a unique collaboration for 15 years or however long it was when Jobs was back and still running the company. And you know, a lot of what his style was is sort of baked into the DNA of the company. So I think they'll continue to do a lot of interesting things for quite a while, longer than I think that people think, because, you know, you're going to have a whole generation of executives that, you know, were young and came up under Jobs, so understood the way he operated, and then have a long period of time under Tim Cook. And, you know, I think Cook is, you know, studied Jobs for very closely for the last 6 or 8 years. And, you know, he was interim CEO since 2004, I want to say, because that was the first health problem was around 2004. So he's been CEO effectively of Apple really off and on since 2004. And look what they've done since then.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I think he's done an awesome job, and I agree with you. I think there's lots more to come.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting, you know, how baked in is it in the DNA? We'll find out how long that, you know, how baked in it is. But I agree. Well,
I think it's pretty baked in.
Yeah. Remember that Steve Jobs hired a senior leader from Harvard, or maybe it was Yale. Who was a real thought leader in higher education and revamping, you know, knowledge management and so on, hired him to essentially run something called Apple University, which was an internal, you know, courses and mentoring and all sorts of things to get people within the company that are emerging leaders and so on to kind of understand the Apple way and have their heads screwed on the way that Jobs had his screwed on. And so, you know, baking it into the DNA, I think they've made it systemic.
Yep.
You would hope so. Yeah, very much so.
Is that program still ongoing? And is that guy still there? He actually was hired by Apple, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's still ongoing.
Yep.
Cool.
Very nice. Well, you know, and then of course the other highlight of the All Things D was Mary Meeker's talk and her infamous slide deck and what, 125 slides, which we'll have a link to on the website.
Right, right.
The big takeaway, obviously, by which has been pointed out by many, is that mismatch between mobile growth and mobile monetization. How fast mobile is growing, yet the percentage of revenue generated by mobile is not keeping pace.
So. Right, right. Isn't as high as everybody is hoping. It will be. But you know, I mean, that in terms of having that make a lot of sense. I mean, it really does make a lot of sense because it's you know, there's always been this push for eyeballs and this push for members and all of that and building that critical mass. And then once you build a critical mass, then you monetize it. Mm-hmm. And you do so very carefully. And I just think that there are just so many changes going on in the economy globally and on the way humans are connecting and, you know, the internet is at the core of that, especially the mobile internet and the devices and all that. And we are so early on in trying to figure all this out that, you know, it makes sense that, you know, all the business models aren't baked and the monetization isn't there. What I loved, the one slide that really stuck out at me was the smartphone growth slide. And that
there's still a huge upside.
Oh my God. Yeah. There's, global smartphone versus mobile phone subscriptions. There's 953 million smartphone subscriptions globally and 6.1 billion in just normal mobile phones, mm-hmm. so-called dumb phones. And,
we call that feature phones.
Yes. But that, I mean, that's an unbelievable upside. I mean, there's literally several billion phones to be replaced potentially by smartphones.
And they probably will be replaced by smartphones because, you know, they're all so inexpensive to make. I mean, you can get free Android phones that are reasonably full featured.
Right. Right.
You know, you can buy an iPhone 3GS for free.
Yep.
You know? And then now, I think I put in the show notes, the Cricket is going to have iPhone 4 and 4S.
Yeah.
You know, prepaid.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's going to be huge when the price of the phone comes down from $400 or $500, you know, if that could get down to a couple $100,
yeah,
which
yeah.
in the prepaid Android market is already there. It's going to see the smartphone market just explode.
Well, and this is the opportunity that Facebook must see globally, you know, for a Facebook phone, you know. I mean, you would think they'd be lusting after that market opportunity.
Oh, no question. Absolutely no question. Well, and it's the other thing that really amazes me when I just step back and look at it is in all these communication apps that are flying around. So my daughter's down in Mexico, as you guys know, and I bought her a SIM card. So she has a nice data plan, a 3 gig data plan, but the voice plan isn't great, especially calling back to the US, and she doesn't want to burn up her minutes. So we're using this little app called Voxer, mm-hmm. where it acts like a walkie talkie. You say what you want to say, and then it sends it down and activates the Voxer app. On her end, and we can go back and forth and have a conversation. I mean, it's just fabulous.
So it's like an asynchronous sort of thing.
Correct. Correct.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's
Tim, Steve hasn't gotten you on Voxer yet.
I think he tried, but you know, my phone doesn't have a lot of memory, so I've got to be very judicious about the apps. Stuff like that. If I don't use it a lot, it's just, they don't make it.
Yeah,
I think that first Voxer exchange you and I had at the MHTA is probably still the only exchange I've had.
Well, how are people using that? I mean, other than your Mexico application, how are people using Voxer?
Well, I'll tell you. So there are probably half a dozen people that I know that actively use it, and my wife is one of them. And so I can send, you know, I can use Siri, for example, and dictate a message, a text message. but I got to futz around. I got to try to touch the microphone and all that when I'm driving. So I don't even like to do that. But what's cool is I can pull up the Voxer app. I can hold down the hold and talk button and just speak through my Bluetooth microphone in the car, let go of it, and it sends the message to her. And then when she responds, I've got it set up for speakerphone, and I can just hear her response. So the bottom line is it's more efficient than trying to send a text message.
Yeah, it's like audio texting or audio tweeting almost.
Right. And you can text for free through the app, and you can also send photos through the app.
You can.
Yes.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And so it's a really, I mean, it's kind of an amazing little device. And
so you could use it for photo sharing, but to add audio captions to your photos.
Correct.
Can you share those on Twitter and Facebook and
not yet.
Tumblr?
I'm going to hear Graham on my tweets now.
Oh my God. Are you kidding? This is like a whole.
Oh God.
All right. Life. All right. No. So I just uninstalled Netflix and I'm installing Voxer.
Uninstalled Netflix.
And you know what really did it for me when I went to the Play Store on my PC, at the very top it says Phil Wilson plus one this, and it has Phil's little picture there.
Sweet.
So if Phil plus one did it, it's gotta be good. Yeah, it says right here.
No way.
It does. Way.
Way? Why would I have plused it? I never would have plused it.
You did, apparently. So
listen to how good this is. This is her from Mexico.
Cool thing. Just so you know, I don't have any checks left. I ran out of checks and I don't.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Send more money, Dad.
Pretty but
good sound quality, though.
The sound quality is fantastic. So, I mean, it's.
So what did you respond? I'm sorry, this isn't working. What did you say?
Call Deluxe. He told her to call Deluxe.
Yeah. I'm going through a tunnel. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, but it's
a good thing that things are cheap in Mexico.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, she sent me a Vox, and it ended up, she said, hey, I need more money in the data plan. So I could top off the SIM card by just going, there's several sites you can go and put in your credit card and you can top off the time. And so I stuck another $25 in there and that bought her another gig. So, I mean, it's a great little app, but,
So how long is she down there? What's she doing?
3 weeks. She's in a U of M Spanish immersion program where they do an entire term in 3 weeks.
Huh. Wow.
And they go to, you know, historical, archaeological sites and she's in class 5 hours a day and then has about 4 to 5 hours of homework. And this is a no fooling around thing. And there's she and another girl are staying. There's like 40 or 50 kids that went down. And she and another girl are staying at a family's house because they're sponsors for the students. And she says, Dad, I so want to live here.
she can't really mean that.
Well, it's in a little town called Cuernavaca, which is about 50 miles away from Mexico City. And it's in a little valley, and it's about 72 degrees year-round. And apparently the Aztecs winter there, the Incas or somebody. But Carlos Slim, the richest guy in the world, that's where he lives. And apparently
he lives in that little town?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I guess he has a huge estate there, but it's a real kind of up and coming place, and they've only had one incident where drug lords cut off the heads of four boys.
Oh, is that all?
Well, there you go. Yeah. So she hasn't experienced any gunplay yet.
Oh, God. We were so freaked out.
I know.
But this happened a year ago. So, yeah. But
Tim,
Mexico,
damn, if you're not right, I did plus one that. How do you unplus one something?
I don't know.
Minus it.
How do you minus something? No. I don't think you can.
I haven't added minus yet.
Once you plused one debt,
you're committed.
You are.
Yeah.
They own that data.
Wonder when I did that. I must have been drunk voxing.
So well, now there's a drunk voxing. Wow, that could be.
I didn't mean it. It's you. It's me. It's not you.
Okay, so I have a question for you guys, and it has to do with the fact that Apple has sold, you know, like 100% more those little Apple TV devices since last year, and there's all these rumors about the Apple TV do you guys really care if the TV is completely reinvented?
Nope.
I mean, it doesn't even matter.
Not when you don't watch much of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it'd be nice to have, you know, all the content, you know, whenever you wanted to watch it.
Right.
So I think there's still some advantages of having some sort of end-to-end solution, but the business models of so many,
broadcast and
there's so many complexities. I just don't see how they can, even with someone like Apple, how they can crack this thing.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see, but I think it's only natural to assume that we're just the internet and the TV is just going to merge together. Yeah, I mean, it's
no question.
It's more and more the internet's going to suck up TV than any other things.
So. But you know, with Leo Laporte's Twit network and Revision 3. And even what the godfather of podcasting, Adam Curry, tried to do with Mevio. And then the Skype guys, what was the name of their? Juiced. They tried Juiced. You know, everybody was trying to build this platform and this network so that anybody could create shows and build their own channel. And I don't see that promise anymore. And I think maybe it's because there's just too much content out there. And so as a consequence, I'm not sure I'd want to sit down and watch, the Graham Thickens show, where you Graham might have a desk
have
and
a
you might be
on YouTube. I get like three visitors a month.
I bet you Graham would be very much like that host from Sabado Gigante on.
What the hell is that?
Oh God.
Oh, funny.
Man. Yeah. There's just too damn much content, you know?
Yeah.
How do you aggregate that content? Would you want to be in the content business? I don't know.
I mean,
in the big content business.
Where you make money?
Cable TV. Right. Yeah, where you actually make money.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know, cable TV. I mean, Disney is a content company, but yeah, the cable companies they're going to be disrupted, aren't they? The cable networks and, the internet. Isn't the internet totally changing that business and causing them to make less and less money all the time?
It hasn't yet.
Well, but where's it going? You know, if internet and TV are going to come together, who's going to win and who's going to lose, you know? A lot of people are betting it's the cable companies that'll lose, right?
Well, they'll have to adapt, I think.
Yep, that's the key, I guess. Well, they can have rights to my YouTube channel.
You give that freely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. For sure. Have at it.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, what do we got coming for upcoming events here in the coming weeks here?
Nope. We got to just stop for one moment, Mr. Wilson.
You got to do this HyperCard thing, don't you?
Just Tim, you and I are soulmates in this, buddy. We just have to just briefly bring up the fact that HyperCard is 25 years old. And for those that know nothing about HyperCard, it was
this
really
you.
Cool
you
stack metaphor.
Life.
But you know what, though? It was the first time that I was able to actually make a deliverable with a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just awesome. And then there were drivers for video disc players, and I could randomly bring up images and video segments from video discs when those were a big deal in education. And it revolutionized what I was able to actually do on the computer. How about you, Tim? You were
Yeah. So I my first Mac was an SE, and I got it in early 1986. And back then, if you'll recall, there weren't any databases really, especially low-end databases for the Mac. So I built a customer database in HyperCard and then took the data that was in my Apple II AppleWorks database and transferred it over. So it was, you know, it was sort of like this toolkit that allowed you to do whatever you wanted to do if there wasn't an app out there to actually do it. And in the early days, there weren't a whole lot of apps, as you recall.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there were some good ones. You know, there's Mac Write and Mac Paint, and you know, even Excel. I think by '86 had come along, and you could use Excel as a database, but it didn't seem great. I don't think Access did. Access ever come to the Mac? I don't think it did.
No, it never did. Uh-uh.
Yeah, because I think Claris was the only one, and I know what happened is, this is a funny one, and I think I still have the disk someplace in the house. Is late in '86, I was at Kodak, and we did the Lotus Jazz, which was their version of sort of 1.2.3 for the Mac, and Jazz never made it past I think version 1.0. And that was the one that we used, and they had a database in that. So, anywho,
cool. But
yeah, no, you could do an awful lot. You could do your own recipe library, and I think I had one of those. And you know, it was sort of like the web before the web.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I thought it was just cool. And then SuperCard came out after that when HyperCard kind of stopped being developed, and that was just too goofy. Never went that way, but it was a real, I just remember the incredible excitement. I was living in Chicago at the time, and Bill Atkinson came into town to,
to have a big event
at one of the Chicago theaters, and the Mac user group ran it. And I remember walking into this event, and there were probably 1,000 people who showed up for this thing.
Wow.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, the guy was a rock star.
Oh, he still is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to put it in to recognize it because it was a kind of a pivotal thing. And that article that's linked there.
Ars Technica.
It really gets into sort of the background. And I forgot that Myst, the great adventure game, was built in HyperCard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I never knew that. Yeah.
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 That's
it's crazy.
That was unbelievable when it came out. What year would that have been? That would have been 90.
Early 90s, like 91 or 92.
Right, yeah. Right. Wow.
But Atkinson admitted that he missed the internet, the ability to connect things.
Right. So did Bill Gates. So.
Well, I think that Apple totally missed the internet early on.
Yeah, they did.
You know, they had the whole idea of after AOL sort of was a big deal, they said, oh, okay. You know, we're going to do our own eWorld thing, which was basically a white boxed version of AOL.
Yep.
And it was like, I looked at that and I said, are you crazy? You know, because I was on AOL in those days, in the very early days. And then I kind of got off of that. I want to say about 95 or 96, something along those lines, and converted completely over to this native internet. But yeah, it was.
Yeah, Apple missed
they missed the boat big time on that.
Yeah,
and what was funny is that Microsoft really got a hold of it with Windows 95.
Yep.
You know, so they really kind of leapfrogged them.
Right.
As far as the internet was concerned.
Yep, that was back in the jobsless days of Apple, I guess, wasn't it? Or it was right around that time.
Right. Right.
Yep. Yep. It's funny how the world has changed in 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
as far as Apple's concerned, they've really dominated the internet space.
Well, we need to wrap up here, boys. So there's only a couple of
things. Oh, that was it? There wasn't any lighting of candles or chorus of voices on that? There you go. Thank you.
Okay.
It would be nice if there was a HyperCard for building apps. That would be, I think.
I predict you're going to get your wish at WWDC.
All right.
There's going to be a new tool revealed.
Hope you're right.
Yeah. So I hope I'm right.
a week from Monday, it all kicks off with a keynote at 10 a.m., right? And I don't think anybody knows who's giving the keynote yet, but it's got to be Tim Cook, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think, yeah.
Tim Cook and friends.
Yeah, he'll have them all on stage, I guess.
Yeah, I think Scott Forstall will probably be on for a long time because there'll be a lot of iOS stuff.
Yep. Yep. And we have about 10 developers from Minnesota that are going to be there that were lucky enough to get tickets. And we'll be hearing from our friend Bill Hyman on Friday the 15th as our guest.
That'll be great.
Yeah, from San Francisco on the last day of WWDC. Yep. That'll be cool.
All right. Well, we got the same events, except we've added TIE Minnesota, the Innovation and Global Imperative session. June 7th.
Yeah, June 7th at McNamara Center.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
All right. Sounds great. Yeah. Everybody have a great weekend, and thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next week on
The Minnovate Gang Podcast.
Over and out.
Take care.